Welcome to Can Queer, home of Canada's queer media. My name is Luke Smith.
And my name is Sebastian.
And it was a good week. Now, I want to apologize. We had a run into a bit of a technical issue last week. We had a great interview with the author of Gay Science. Strongly recommend that book. I've been telling everyone all week about it. But the rest of the show, we had to re-record, and the mic quality was not where it should have been. And for that, we apologize. Moving on. What a week it's been. But first of all, Sebastian, I wanted to ask you about scary lesbians.
Scary lesbians, okay, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Scary lesbians. What do you think is the scariest lesbian? Now, be careful. Some of them are listening.
I don't know. Some kind of like daywalker vampire lesbian sounds kind of frightening. Or some kind of like Lovecraftian Cthulhu horror who also is same-sex attracted. That sounds pretty terrifying.
That's a good, very good save. It did make me think of Lesbian Vampire Hunters.
It wasn't a great movie, but it wasn't that bad.
I liked it. I think it was set in Wales. They were all Welsh anyway.
And
it was,
yeah,
it was
quite, people crapped all over it. It was watchable. I don't know.
It was watchable. But it turns out maybe scary is not the right word here, but rather something that somebody would avoid. In the Journal of Social Psychology, they studied the relationship status of gay men and lesbians and how straight people interacted with them.
Yes. Okay.
And if you were to take a stab in the dark, what would your instinct be on how the straights might react to queer folks?
All right. Okay. I think I see where you're going with this. Right. Okay. So, well, first of all, it is a myth that gay men and lesbian women do not get along. Some gay men and some lesbian women get on like the house is on fire. Like they really, really, really enjoy each other's company. From my own experience, this sounds oddly specific. Ex-military lesbians, mm-hmm. I get along with them fantastically. A lot of them are very, you know, practical, you know, very, very head screwed on right types of women. And you just ask them a question, they just tell you what they think. And if you're offended by that, that's your business. And I really like that attitude. Some people find that incredibly intimidating though. And it is a type of confidence that reads as masculine, but I don't think it needs to, but some people do find that intimidating. And I think in the modern context, a lot of people, it's kind of an online meme in different spaces that if you see the blue hair and the nose piercing and the cat rimmed glasses, then you're about to hear something you probably don't want to hear. So I would say there's that stereotype. So I'd say it's probably one of those two, but like, you know, big old butch lesbians who work in a garage fixing pickup trucks, like bit of a stereotype. I have met women like that and they are also real fun company. I had a friend who referred to them as beer and chicken wing lesbians.
What are you fishing for? What are you looking at?
So what I was going to be talking about is there was a study of about 930, and you know, always preface this with these studies. It's a radio. You can't hear me air quoting, but I am air quoting studies that are done in universities. The audience is, you know, 18 to 20 somethings who are in higher education. They are not representative of the general population.
It's not a good cross-section. Yeah.
It's just a, what's the sort of going trend in this area with these people? But they were looking at, they made these little vignettes.
Okay.
And the vignettes were about people. It's either about Mark or it's about Mary. Mm-hmm. And in some of the vignettes, maybe Mark is single and maybe Mark is in a relationship.
Okay.
Maybe you don't know. And in some of them, maybe Mark is gay, maybe Mark is straight.
Okay.
And what they were looking at is the social distancing measure. You know, how much would you like to interact with Mark, the straight man?
Okay.
marry the single lesbian,
okay,
for example. And really, they were just trying to get a sense of that avoidance. Now, this might shock you,
okay,
but straight men kind of okay with hanging out with lesbians. That mm-hmm. was a key takeaway.
Mm-hmm.
No issues whatsoever. And straight men, on the whole, not super keen on hanging out with gay men in relationship or out. Okay. Doesn't matter. A negligible difference between single gay men and partnered gay men. They would just rather not hang out with the gay men. Now, the interesting thing is straight women.
Okay.
They have no issues with gay men. Now, this might also be a bit of a shock, surprise, kill, right. surprise. Straight women and gay men, no challenge, no issues.
Mm-hmm.
They did ask where the party invite was, but that's another story. Now, straight women and lesbians.
Okay.
Very good, totally fine with hanging out with lesbians in a relationship.
But not single ones.
But not single lesbians.
Oh, yeah. Interesting. Yeah. That is interesting.
Yeah, there seems to be a sense of avoidance to single lesbians. Now, there's been other studies mm-hmm. looking at this idea of, I mean, we have to go all the way back to...
And also, just as an interesting little point there, that there have been many, many studies that look into, well, they found that women prefer the company of men who are dating or married because in their minds they've been pre-screened by other women. So single men are viewed as more threatening than men who are dating. So this is patterning oppositely in a manner that, I don't know, like you could probably make up a just so story that makes sense, but what did the researchers say?
So they kind of, I mean, they did refer to the fact that straight men have no issues hanging out with other straight men. That's not, you know, that's a fine, you know, that is what it is. But they don't want to hang out with gay men regardless of their relationship status. So okay. they, you know, they said that that's a sexual prejudice, i.e. those men are predisposed to not wanting to hang out with okay. gay men. And what they found was that there's an element of that potentially with how straight women were viewing single lesbians.
Okay, yeah.
So that idea of maybe being the unwanted object of desire, maybe bringing up uncomfortable conversations,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's a social distancing survey, you know, how close. And it was really interesting that straight women would just rather not. But once they're in a relationship, dynamic changes. You know, and I think you kind of talk about the idea of there being pre-screened by other women, as it were.
Mm-hmm.
That potential risk factor doesn't seem to be there. Now, it was a small sample study. It was, you know, just a one-off.
Mm-hmm.
But it touches on a lot of other research
that's
been going on for a long time. Particularly this idea of queer promiscuity, the fact that single queer folks, gay men in particular,
mm-hmm.
are just naturally going to be more promiscuous, more at risk,
mm-hmm.
Which I don't think is entirely, it's not true.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Well, we've talked about this before, that it's if you average out over the population, okay, yeah, but averaging out over a population is a very complicated thing because that's not how populations work. You're going to have pockets of people who are like this, you're going to have pockets of people who are like that, you're going to have cultural differences, personality differences. So some men are straight men. Some straight men are fine with having 200, 300, 400 body count. You know, sleeping around, they got no problem with that in themselves. And some straight men really just want to have sex with as few people as they can get away with until they find their forever partner. And the same is true with gay men, that there are some who got no problem with being promiscuous and some who really want to settle down and really want to have a long-term relationship. And the numbers between them is about the same. The difference is that when gay men who are fine with promiscuity find each other, it's on. there's fewer barriers to entry, so to speak, and they can really get around, especially if you're somewhere like New York City or really any metropolitan center. I mean, Montreal, Toronto, Vancouver, in the Canadian context, it is not at all a problem to sleep with 100 people a year. You just need to find 100 different men who have that pattern. And if you're unscrupulous, take advantage of and some people are unscrupulous and they're willing to trick people who are more relationship oriented into having a one-off. So you can really expand the number if your morals are not so great and if you're not upfront with what you want. So really it's the exact same thing. It's just that when you don't have the barrier of women like sex, but they don't like sex in the same way that men like sex, that without that barrier there, then you could just not sow your wild oats, like be sponsored by Monsantis to sow your wild oats, sow your wild oats across a 500 acre plot in Alberta, the amount of sowing your wild oats, if you're a gay man who has that disposition already. Lesbians don't have that reputation in general, but there have been studies that show that some women are also comfortable with that as well. And in the lesbian community, again, same thing, they will find each other and they will have a much higher than average number of sexual partners. So it's promiscuity among gay men it's complicated. It's men who are promiscuous and gay are extremely promiscuous. Non-promiscuous gay men are as non-promiscuous straight men. That makes sense. And then same thing with lesbians, that those who are promiscuous can vastly outperform a promiscuous heterosexual woman, but who are not promiscuous have about the same amount of sexual partners as non-promiscuous straight women.
And I think we have to, the question is like, oh my gosh, why is that? But it's hard to say, because the world of the 2020s is not the world of when I was out, coming into my own, even in the 2010s, being quite kind to myself there.
Mm-hmm.
The issue here is looking a little bit more at social psychology, evolutionary psychology, and this idea of how people navigate risk and reward in relationships.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm going to quote directly here from their abstract, and it goes on, they're talking about the study, then it goes on to say, moreover, heterosexual women reported increased social distance towards single compared to coupled lesbian targets, mediated through perceptions of undesired sexual interest from the target. Now, these aren't real people. They're fake vignettes. They're like entirely made up, but there was still this perceived undesired sexual interest. It goes on to say, this work demonstrates the nuanced nature of sexual prejudice and provides further evidence of the role of perceptions of undesired sexual interest, prejudice responses towards lesbians and gay individuals. Is a gay couple less intimidating to, single gay men, or a lesbian couple less intimidating to single straight women than their single counterparts would be?
It's more about who is sexually interested in women and not in the individual themselves. So a single man that they do or do not find attractive, whether personality or physical, same thing with a woman who is into women, who is single, they just view them as being potential sources of awkwardness, possibly physical threat as well. But there is that Canadian thing where Canadians hate saying no. So some Canadians will just avoid situations where they might have to say no, which is why sometimes we come off as antisocial. This was something that I didn't even notice until an American pointed it out to me, that a lot of Canadians just avoid situations where they might have to say no, instead of just getting comfortable with saying no offense, but no, thank you. But I think it really is just that. I think it has more to do with navigating a social situation and not having to put the person who's speaking to you into a position, not putting yourself into a position where you could risk saying no to someone who reacts poorly. So if you know that they're unlikely to ask you out at all, they got the wedding ring, they're already coupled off, they're sort of a non-threat in general. There could be societal homophobia on the table as well, but I don't think you have to dip into that pool immediately. I think that's a factor, but I don't think that has to be the explanation.
We are going to be back in just a few minutes as we talk about the federal budget, the CAS review.
Oh, yes.
And then before that, a discussion coming out of the UK around spiked drinks.
Ooh.
So more than that in just a few minutes. But before we dive into this, we are playing Cedar Roots Into the Great Unknown. This is some nice contemporary folk here, some West Coast musicians, Cedar Roots, and we will be back just after this.
Looking out to the horizon at that big bright sun.
And welcome back to Cancqueer, home of Canada's queer media. My name is Luke Smith.
My name is Sebastian.
In 2022, the alcohol, oh my gosh, I swear I've not had any officer. The Alcohol Education Trust, there we go, that was a mouthful. The Alcohol Education Trust in the UK, in Britain, released a study. And they were looking at the rates of folks who identified as being having had their drinks spiked.
Yes.
Now, for those who are maybe not as familiar with that term, we're not referring to, you know, a shot of vodka in a lemonade here. Yes. Do you want to explain for our listeners what we have in mind?
Well, you're just saying roofies, basically.
Yeah. Or GHB or other similar drugs.
Yeah, there's a whole, you know, smorgasbord of options on the table of varying qualities of chemicals and drugs and tranquilizers that you can put in someone's drink that, because actually alcohol is an organic solvent, anything you put in there will dissolve into it faster than it in water, even though it's cold and things dissolve more slowly in cold liquids. But anyway, and they can do all sorts of things. The classic one is that it just puts you to sleep. So Quaaludes can do that. No, Quaaludes don't do that. I don't remember what Quaaludes do. Anyway, yeah, you could just put somebody to sleep. There's ones that make you so incredibly drowsy, you just become automatically compliant, that you just sort of go along with whatever you're told. It kind of like makes you hyper drunk. And there are also ones you can put chemicals in there that speed up the process of getting drunk. So two drinks can make you feel like you drank an entire keg, basically. There's a whole raft of things you can put in. You shouldn't, to be clear, but that have been used in the past. And even things like ecstasy, like you can roofie somebody not to put them out, but to put them into another state. Like it's basically any unwanted chemical in there, but classically it's something that makes you either compliant or fall asleep.
But let's be absolutely unequivocally clear here. It is thoroughly illegal. It's, and incredibly it's moral. Illegal.
Yes.
And
it's an unwanted substance. It's basically poison.
Yeah. You could be arrested for administrating a poisonous substance. It's outrageous. It is the behavior of very few and scrupulous characters who are taking advantage of people. But the rate, the instance rate, self-reported instance rate, is really what was quite interesting. Now, the Alcohol Education Trust did not do a massive study. They were looking at England and Scotland. Okay. They had about 750-odd responses.
Okay.
But what they found was that of that group, about 15% of the women said that they had experienced their drinks being spiked. Now, that is more than double what it was for men.
Okay.
So women are being spiked at a rate almost double. It was like 7% of men self-reported.
Okay.
With the exception of when you look at the LGBTQ community, those who identified as queer in some way, their incidence rate climbs up and matches that of women self-reporting in this survey as well. So about 15% as well, which is really quite shocking. And
it's about one in six.
Yeah, which is outrageous.
Yeah,
I think that it is as high as that.
So, I mean, if you're talking about spiking in general and not just spiking as a prelude to unconsensual sexual events, I'm trying to stay away from the middle words.
That's frequently where things,
it is
that's the purpose for what it was.
But if you do the broad thing, like, you know, somebody goes to a party and drops something in the punch bowl that doesn't belong in the punch bowl, you know, they put, like, that is equally being spiked and that is equally illegal. So when you all together, even the people who are doing it because they think that you will enjoy it, or it is not a downer, they are not there to put you to sleep or make you compliant. One in six or one in 12. Unfortunately, I hear that and I think that sounds about right.
But let's be very clear here.
Oh, yeah.
It can have devastating consequences. You know, people can be on medications that can react to it. That it's just it's I we cannot stress enough, absolutely outrageous and very much don't do it. Now Quebec tried to kind of tackle this, particularly the use of GHB with folks targeting women's drinks. Okay. Last year, last summer, they looked at introducing measures. Check Your Glass pilot project was launched, but 10,000 lids okay. to put on glasses in Montreal to try and cut back on the incidence mm-hmm. rate of this in Montreal. Just this past April, so earlier this last month, there was a woman in Toronto who said that her drink was spiked, and she suspected that it may have been an attempt to even traffic her. The venue did then put out a statement mm-hmm. a little later. We're not going to identify.
You know, when I worked in the bar, what a lot of customers did, what I ended up helping them with, is if they stepped away from the bar, they would put their beer coaster on top of their drink, lift it and pop it in. But it is a lot more conspicuous to lift the coaster and drop in a drink than it is to like pass your hand over it and drop it in like a magician or something, you know? So there actually were times where I would go around and put coasters on top of people's drinks because they had stepped outside for a smoke. And it's, I don't know, there are small things you can do as a community to watch each other's back. I had a reputation of being a wholesome bartender, though. There's not Absolutely. A lot of them in the gay scene.
It's not, we're not talking small scale here. There was another study that said that drug-facilitated sexual assaults, so DFSAs, account for about 15 to 20% of sexual assault okay. cases. I believe that is American. Okay. But mm-hmm. it's not zero. The prevalence of that sort of self-reported rate in this recent study in the UK, these drugs being used where queer folks have identified right. themselves as having been spiked, and the fact that it is at the same rate, and GHB
is also well known and flavorless in the gay community, particularly well known for its ability to blend in with whatever you put it in with. Yeah, it's got a reputation for sure.
And there is actually a Canadian supplier of a drink testing. Tool.
Oh, it's those little, it's like a litmus test. It's like a little strip of paper and you dip it in there and it turns color. Is that the one? Yeah, okay.
Exactly. That is exactly it. Yeah, I think it is Alcohol Prevention Canada is the one that also has that particular technology. So nice little Canadian connection there as well. But certainly something to be aware of. Be safe when you're out there, because it does happen.
Yes.
And it does happen to queer folks. So certainly something to think about. I want to pivot a little bit now to some news out of Nova Scotia. Now, the AIDS Coalition of Nova Scotia, they had themselves quite the to-do.
Was it a hubbub? Was it that bad?
It wasn't a hubbub, okay. But it was a to-do. But yes, it was a fancy gathering. It's been highly reported
Ooh, fancy.
As a fancy gathering. I know. But yes, no, they had a fancy gathering for the AIDS Coalition of Nova Scotia, a whole bunch of various organizations. And the reason why they were having this gala, they're obviously trying to drive donations, all the other the normal reasons why charities have a gala, but they were going through a rebrand. They are now Heal Nova Scotia. And that's H-E-A-L Nova Scotia. And that is the Health Equity Alliance of Nova Scotia. So this is partly because they are no longer exclusively working on addressing HIV and AIDS. Now, this is actually something that we've seen not just in Nova Scotia with this particular charity, Heal Nova Scotia, but we saw really under the start of, I think it may even have been partly under the sort of Stephen Harper conservative years,